My name is Marilyn Simons, and I'm going to read to you from my novel, The Holding. The Holding is the story of two women, Margaret McBain, who emigrates from Scotland to Canada in 1859, and Alison Thompson, who leaves the city in the 1990s to move north into the Madawaska. And both women end up living on the same piece of property 150 years apart. In the novel, the stories of each of these women alternates throughout the book, and I'm going to read a short selection from the beginning of the book, which is a Margaret chapter, Margaret, summer 1859. Pittenweem. The wind, like a gossip, is everywhere. It fusses with Margaret's hair as she stands on the brae head, and it rises through the village kirkyard too. Her bedgown jacket, printed with blue heart's ease, billows gently at her chest, and her layered petticoats, the topmost one drawn back as an apron, give the appearance of widening hips, though by the slimness of her hands it's clear she's still a girl. She stands with her mother before the family marker, a plain grey stone like all the others, inscribed already with too many names. A sway of dark skirt, and Margaret leans to glimpse a woman slipping between the graves. She follows, for she's seen her before, though always at a distance, gathering simples on the brae or seaweed on the tidal rocks, pausing by the kirk tower or at the lip of the seawall, gazing down at the water that worries the stones, one hand fixed on the last bollard, as if she were tethered to it. There's something odd about her clothes, the old-fashioned white cloth she wears under her head square, the rough weave of her skirt. Odder still is her bearing, something furtive in her posture, despite her frame, which is sturdy, and her glance, which is compelling, defiance in her eye. Margaret pursues her now between the obelisks and the monuments until at last she has her trapped. The old woman turns to face her, a slight smile on her lips, as though this was her intention, the two of them alone in a crease of wall where the grass grows high and the markers are laid flat as if to make certain the dead keep to their place. The old woman regards Margaret with encouragement, a promise in her gaze. But before the girl can think to ask who she is or what she wants, the woman takes a step back and dissolves through the stones. But that's not where the story starts, in childish games or faintly smiling ghosts. It begins like birth in blood. The tide is turning, the sea withdrawing into itself, allowing its bones to show. Soon the men on the seawall will slip the ropes from the bollards, and the emigrant ship, the Deirdre, will sail out to sea, past the May Isle, which in that troubled light of early spring seems to hover above the firth. Margaret leans on the ship's rail, watching the ribs of stone rise. Then the water shifts, the sunlight darkens, and as in a vision, an old woman rises too. A rope is tethered around her body. It stretches from the bowsprit of the Deirdre to a clutch of men on the seawall, who are hauling on the rope mightily, pulling the woman up, her neck, her arms, her chest exposed, and Margaret thinks, they're saving her. But the men let slip the rope, and the woman sinks beneath the waves. Out of sight so long, Margaret believes she surely must be drowned. Then the men set to work and haul her up again, spluttering. The villagers gathered on the shore press forward for a better view, the fishermen careful not to wet their feet, though the women boldly wade into the seawater, rucking up their skirts, mindless of their modesty, their fish-hawking voices chanting a shrill chorus, though Margaret can't make out the words. Only one man is brave enough, or fool enough, to step into the sea. A sailor tosses him the rope, and he strains against the tide, dragging the woman's body out onto the rising stones. Her clothes are torn from her limbs, which lie broken and bruised, parts splayed at odd angles, swollen beyond their natural form, breasts blackened by fire, her belly seeping fluid from 1,000 pin-pricked holes. The sight stays the mob. And in that fresh moment of silence, Margaret thinks she hears the woman breathe, hears a faint rasp of words, though whether they beg for mercy or pray for death, she can't be sure. The woman's whispers stir the rabble as a breeze stirs fallen leaves, and they move about uncertainly. Then a shout gives them purpose, and they part for a brace of men bearing a door like the Ark of the Covenant high above their heads. The men hurl the door onto the broken body, and as if waiting for that signal, the horde scatters along the shore, prying up boulders in a frenzy, casting them down upon the door, stone on stone, on wood on bone, a pummeling like thunder, like rapid cannon fire, while the man who walked in the sea, the man dressed all in black, lifts his face to the heavens, singing, "In the name of Jesus, in the name of Jesus, we have the victory. In the name of Jesus, demons will have to flee." His words are drowned in the rumble of a sledge drawn along the shore. The driver whips the oxen, prodding them onto the stones, onto the door pressed onto the woman, driving the beasts forward, yanking them back, whipping them forward again. The others, worn out with their labors, content themselves with taunts. "What good your simples and your charms now, Janet Cornfoot, until no more blood seeps among the stones." And Margaret bows her head to her hands, her fingers taut against her temples, her pulse a reassurance, a blessing, a curse.